hello.
Howdy and hello. Welcome to Taking in the Scene, the greatest podcast that ever was.
There ever was. That's a lot of pressure. Can we be like a really good podcast?
No. Greatest that ever was. Okay. I don't know why we shouldn't be shooting for the stars.
Also, what if we miss?
Then we'll die of oxygen, lack of oxygen. But
breath play. Okay, cool.
Yes, there you go. Welcome to Taking in the Scene. I'm really excited today. We have an incredible interview that we're going to do with our guest today. Before we introduce our guest, I'll introduce myself. I am Mango Sorbet, and I'm joined, as ever, by...
Warm Orange.
Woo!
Hi.
Our other co-host, Denzel Darko, is actually competing as the first American on the Great British Bake Off.
Yes, so, indeed.
We're cheering him on.
Yes, we are.
I know that y'all didn't know that he was an avid baker.
Indeed.
But it turns out he's good enough for the Great British Bake Off.
For sure, for sure.
So we're really proud of him.
Is a multifaceted person, which is why we appreciate him so much.
Yeah, he just went from his biathlon to the Great British
did he do a biathlon to the Bake Off?
Yes. Yes. He skied to the Bake Off. No. This is going to be confusing, especially if people don't listen to the episode where we said he was doing a biathlon.
Also, considering that we might not release these
in the same order. That's fine. It's all a little hodgepodge, and we're quite proud of that.
This is the Taking in the Scene extended universe.
Yeah, the multiverse.
The multiverse.
And in this multiverse, or in this universe, we are so excited to welcome Vahafta, who's going to be talking about disability and kink today. Vahafta, before I let you speak, can I read your bio for our listeners?
Go for it.
Great. Okay. Vahafta began her kink journey about a decade ago and has been grateful to get to teach, play, and learn in communities in North Carolina, Chicago, St. Louis, and Israel along the way. Today, she served her husband in a 24/7 CNC-based total power exchange with heavy elements of emotional play and service, and is often found sporting large bruises, writing, or enjoying a good beer. Vahafta is disabled, Jewish, and femme, and believes in approaching kink with a firm understanding of intersectional context. As an educator, she aims to give honest, and risk-aware information that applies to the realities of human behavior, focusing largely on the how and asking people to consider their personal capabilities, interests, and readiness. Passionate about community collaboration, Vahafta is proud to run the Risk Evaluation Database, RED, and contribute regularly to kink blogs and her own FetLife Writing Index. In all aspects of her life, she strives to be a work in progress. Welcome, Vahafta!
Thank you! I'm super pleased Woo. To be a part of the shindig.
We are so excited to have you here.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was saying before... I think you might be our first guest who's Jewish, and as a fellow Jewish kinkster, I'm just so excited. I'm like, yay, one of us. I just have this weird feeling that, like, Jews are just kinky.
Yeah, so I've met, like, a surprising number of people who are Jewish and kinky in one group or the other, and I have a theory that it's either... the ritual or the guilt.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
But there's like a bigger overlap than I would ever expect.
I like those theories. I also think that in our, you know, like at least in my Jewish upbringing, there wasn't a ton of shame around sex and sexuality and exploration.
Right. Well, yeah.
So while it's fun to pretend to have shame, I didn't actually like feel bad about exploring sexuality,
right?
Which I know makes me incredibly privileged. I'm so lucky.
Well, hello, I'm Warm Orange. I'm very much not a Jewish person. However,
Jew expert right here, Warm Orange. No. Tell us about it. All right.
But no, I've been actually in the past 3 or 4 days listening continuously to lectures by Himri Abrahamson, who's a Jewish lecturer. Long story short, I learned about the different books that you all have, the sacred texts that you all have, one of them being the Talmud.
Talmud.
Talmud, yeah, Talmud, which is basically the point of it is to list the text and then discuss it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's so cool.
It's just opinions.
Yes. It's like a bunch of opinions that people talk about and debate, and there's not always solutions, but it's like, ah. Meanwhile, Christianity is like, this is it because we said so. I was like, what?
Orange, have you heard the term two Jews, three opinions?
No, I have not.
And if you've never seen a picture of a page of Talmud, you have like a text in the middle and the commentary goes around. It's really something. Right. But if you're ever interested in more of that theory, there's a book called Talmudic Sex.
Oh my God.
Which is really? It's like a small little read, but it's a great read. Yeah. And it talks about all the different Talmudic opinions on sex and all the sex positivity in Judaism. Oh.
I'm just like definitely overwhelmed with happy right now. I can't tell you. I mean, like, I dig that I'm Jewish, partially because of the sex positivity, but also because, like, very pro-abortion and, like, for the most part, like, moving with the times, which I'm about.
Yeah.
That, as Orange would say, goes a long way to say very happy to have a fellow Jewish kinkster. But we are not here to talk about your Judaism. Although now I feel
some
like
other time.
Some other time. We'll have you back for season three and we can just talk about, like, Jews and kings.
Oh my gosh, that would be I would
it would be a fun episode.
I love that.
I mean, like, we can talk about whatever we want. It's our podcast, so I'm into that. We're here to talk about disability and kink. The last season we had like varying throughout various episodes discussions of ability, disability and kink and people's access to spaces, to play activities of various kinds. And the three of us co-hosts are just not experts in the way that we could be to discuss this issue. So we're really excited to have you on.
Right.
Shall we dive into the questions?
Let's do it.
Yes,
hell
please.
Yes. Before we dive in, anything you'd like to add from your bio that wasn't there?
Oh gosh.
Everything.
No. I don't know right now.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it'll come up. Very excited about that. Bahafta, can you tell us, I know this is a big question, but how has play affected your disability and vice versa?
Such a big question to start with. And it's a surprising one. Yeah, because the vice versa is where I would expect most people to start, because this question of how has play affected disability is one people don't like to talk about, because, you know, we are kinksters. We are pro-kink. We don't want to say that there could be negatives that happen, but there are. And for me, I was very involved in the rope world when I first got involved in
kink. I already know where this is going.
Yep. So one of the disabilities that I live with has to do with hypermobility.
Oh,
which
no.
You're a yoga person. Yeah. Do you know about hypermobility? And there are plenty of ways.
Is this EDS?
I have EDS. And there are plenty of ways to get into bendy positions safely. But passive stretching is not one of them. And rope, by its very nature, ends up being passive.
I'm nodding a lot.
And plus, the rope world, you know, people like to take pretty pictures, and so it tends to exploit hypermobility in any way. And I certainly think that if I were more aware of what hypermobility was and safety around it when I first started in kink, that element of my life wouldn't have degenerated as quickly as it did. And I don't, I won't go up in rope anymore. I won't be suspended. I will sometimes do floor rope, but I won't do anything where there's a gravity influence happening.
Right.
And so I can't say for sure that play has affected my condition at all. But I do believe it has.
So are you implying that there's been an acceleration overall, like, of your condition because of rope? Like, or potential acceleration, I should say.
Yeah. So I have joints that either sublux, which is a partial dislocation, or dislocate fully very easily. And that happening more and more over time can cause cumulative damage.
I see.
And so pretty much any time that I was extending past my normal range of motion in rope, there was a chance that there was more and more damage adding right. up.
Which relative to my knowledge on rope, I mean, things like if you do something as simple, or simple, if you do something like a strappado, for instance, strappado is definitely one of those, like, it will hyperextend if you can hyperextend. Mm-hmm. That's where you have your arms behind your back. And they're, you know, in the cool little T shape or A shape. But also things as simple as a fudo when your leg is folded. Because I know for me, like, I have bad circulation in my own legs. Mm-hmm. So if I stay in a fudo for too long, then my leg starts falling asleep. But I can also see a situation to where staying bent can, like, overbend, especially mm-hmm. if you have hypermobility. Like, I didn't think about it that way, but yeah. I can see it. It's, so, like, yeah.
Honestly, I can't be kneeling for too long. Mm-hmm. I'm not, and I don't have EDS. I mean, this is... Mm-hmm. You talking about yoga, I just wanted to interject to say mm-hmm. that people will come to me and say, I can't do yoga, I'm not flexible enough. And I always tell people, I prefer that you not be flexible when you come to my class mm. because flexible people rely on their flexibility for positions that should rely on strength, mm. which means they are hurting themselves in order to do what they see on Instagram or what they see in magazines or, you know, just like, the yoga and wellness industry has really done a lot of damage to our views of our... I mean, that's, again, another episode.
Well, and absolutely. And if more rope people said that about right. strength and flexibility, I think that I would see it as a safer community. But instead
right.
you have,
right.
oh, you're super bendy. Yeah. I would love to get you in rope sometime. Right. Right. And I've seen that get better over the past 5-6 years. But yeah.
Well, to be fair, I think a lot of rope people... Speaking specifically from my own observations, a lot of rope people don't understand a lot of the context, like the Western rope versus Eastern rope. There's a whole debate between those yeah. two things. And it's like, even in Western and Eastern rope, there's like different mentalities, different approaches, and all are valid. It's just you have to determine which one you want to be in. Like, there's a lot of nuance that gets glazed over by, oh, right. you can do, or you should tie a TK because that's what I taught. And it's like, no, do you know why you're tying a TK though? Do you know, mm-hmm, do you know yeah. that you can adapt it? Did you know that you don't have to suspend to have fun? And like, that feeds into that potential dangerousness. That yeah, you're referring
I'm,
to.
I mean, honestly, rope people who are experts at rope mm-hmm. aren't always experts at anatomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or expert. I mean, like, if every rope person was also a yoga teacher, that still wouldn't go all the way into them understanding.
Right.
Like, the complex anatomies of people, especially people with hypermobility.
Yeah.
But what Orange just said about, do you understand why you're tying it, is very mm-hmm. important too, because mm-hmm. the structures of different ties, mm-hmm. if you understand what each component does, mm-hmm. it does make it easier to adapt for different kinds mm-hmm. of body needs yep. and depending on what an individual body can do, not just different bodies from each other, but on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
People who have a better understanding of the structure of a tie mm-hmm. are going to be able to adapt that
yeah.
and tie for longer, and their mm-hmm. bottoms are going to be able to tie for longer. I have lots of feelings about the rope world.
Well, yeah, and like just
we want to hear them.
Just to throw in this last one, like, at the risk of introducing or injecting a fat phobic statement of, you shouldn't tie somebody you can't lift. And it's like, you're only saying that because you don't know how to tie somebody right. that you can't lift, with air quotes.
Or like how
also the stigmatized
works.
right
it's like pulleys.
Yeah,
right,
like, right.
What
yeah.
It's it also stigmatizes saying that you have to be a certain type of body mm-hmm. to be tied in rope right. and it's like, that's not fair. It's like, what if I want to be tied in rope? You know, I'm not the burliest person in the world, but I'm definitely not lanky, with air quotes.
Right.
So it's like, what if I want to be tied? Are you saying I can't be tied on rope by somebody who's really good at tying?
Also, and I think we might have talked about this before, but like mm-hmm. in any given moment, I mm-hmm. can lift like maybe 50, 60 pounds and mm-hmm. I can't hold it for that long. Mm-hmm. And nobody weighs 50, 60 pounds. So right. what, am I not allowed to do anything?
So, what, you can't deadlift this entire house?
What also, do you mean? When you lift someone, you are not deadlifting them. I can deadlift a lot more than 50, 60 pounds. I'm talking about like picking up.
Oh, okay. And carrying
with my
you.
Arms. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not, you know, like mm-hmm. doing curls.
Well, okay, 50, 60 okay. Pounds. Okay. Mango, let's be fair. While your arm strength may not be there, your leg strength is like God tier. I just want to highlight that because I've seen photos of your legs. I'm like, wow. Those look like very strong legs. That's exactly yeah. what I say when I see the legs.
Never skip leg day.
Never skip
it's
leg
true.
Day.
I love that this conversation has gone over the place. I'm mm-hmm. very excited about that.
Right.
Well, go ahead, Orange.
Well, I was going to add an additional note. Like, is it just rope? Is that just one example that you can recall? Or is there other...
Yeah, no, that's just one example. Because so many different physical... Mm. Limitations are cumulative in that way. So whether that's doing impact and certain nerves being in the way, whether it's just the postures we hold ourselves in on certain furnitures, and injury over time, because depending how you play, I mean, I do see injury as a when, not an if.
Yeah.
To be quite honest, and injuries affect different people differently and for longer. And the model of disability that I follow, we will all more than likely be disabled at some point in our lives. And it can come from injury that comes from play.
Yeah.
Most certainly.
I have two thoughts on that. The first is a question, which is, in your specific relationship dynamic, which, as I've read, is this 24/7 relationship dynamic, what have you had to navigate around changing the types of play based on play that's caused you injury?
Oh, gosh. That is such a big question.
Okay. I'm asking some tough stuff.
Wow.
You can take it in chunks, by the way.
So the first thing I'd say about that is I have learned now to establish very quickly with any of my doctors what I do. And at least make sure they have an awareness of what kink is and that they're not automatically looking at me and saying that's abuse.
Yeah.
Because when I do come to them with something and say, hey, is it safe for me to do X, Y, Z? Or worst case scenario, being like, I have had this happen since doing X, Y, Z. That's not the time to explain to them what kink is.
Right.
Right.
So I've any first doctor's appointment with any new specialist, we talk about kink. In the context...
Now I have like 13 other questions because this is also something I want to talk about. So bookmarked this, but keep talking.
In the context of the relationship, we do a lot of research both on my various disabilities and limitations and on any kind of play we do, because there are many things that don't get written about or talked about in kink simply because people don't think it'll apply to enough other kinksters, or it just doesn't occur to them. So there isn't readily available information to say, okay, you know, what is it going to do to my spinal fluid to be upside down for this amount of time in kink? But in medical journals, there might be something that is relevant. So we do a lot of reading of like medical articles, like together romantically, because we're nerds. And we'll talk about, okay, how could X affect Y? I think we do a lot more labbing. People tend to think of labbing as something, again, that happens in rope.
Right.
But with my body, it is very frequent that we'll get a new toy and we'll say, okay, how does this feel here? What does this affect there? So I think we experiment a lot more. I think we read a lot. I hope that answered.
That definitely answers.
Okay.
Well, and just to add on to that, because we will be adding here forever. I'm saying 90-minute episode. We have plenty.
Never a 90-minute episode.
I tried. It's a running joke. What I was going to say about the medical papers is like masturbation. So if you masturbate, there's a medical... I recall reading this from some scientific adjacent source. It may not have been the most scientific. But if you masturbate while laying down versus masturbating while sitting up, like in a chair or something, then like your body might react differently. So you might not be able to get your body to get the juices flowing. Pseudoscience. Sorry. This is a penis specifically.
Penis people. Okay.
Penis wielders, as I like to call them.
Yeah.
But the concept in this one is could be extended to another case, which is, this is a very, very big stretch. I just want to emphasize.
Wait, what was the difference when you're lying down versus sitting up?
Oh, it's just that you might have trouble performing in sexual intercourse. So basically, like if you're used to laying down while getting off, if you have to sit up while doing sex, it may not work. It's like something real, like 5 or 6 years ago. So like, I could be conflating some ideas.
I have a lot of questions. We'll save them for after the episode.
For sure. And I'll definitely see if I can find that particular article so I can corroborate what I was referring to. But there was a recent situation where somebody had a writing on FET, like once or recently, within the last 2 or 3 months, to where they had a situation to where their dynamic ended and they could only get off when their partner said they can get off. So they had a unintended, like everything ended amicably, as far as I understand it. But it was a situation to where now if that person wants to get off, they need to like think about their partner that they broke up with to get off. And it's like, that's like one of those long-term effects that people don't talk about, because sometimes people say, oh, it doesn't affect enough people. When in reality, it very well does affect a lot of people to some degree.
Yeah, that cue getting programmed in, more or less. Yeah, I mean, I think we could all stand to study more about, you know, brains and just the basics of how brains and bodies work when we think about kink. And then the other thing with something that is 24/7 is we're not negotiating before every kind of play we do, right? It's just in our daily life, which means that I am very proactive in announcing where I'm at any given day. And for a while, we actually ran into an issue where I felt we weren't playing as often and that maybe there was something going on and that we needed to have a discussion about the relationship. And what it really was is, while I was assuming good to go unless otherwise stated, my partner was assuming not good to go unless otherwise stated. And so
I'm with him on this one, especially when it comes to safety.
He certainly takes the he's a little bit more risk conscious than I can be at times, which is good, being the top, better than the other way around, in my opinion. But I've had to learn to be pretty shameless and out there with anything on any given day. I have like some gastrointestinal stuff that
I get it.
Oh no.
One of the reasons. Yep. I mean, look, we're just like not made for dairy. Nope. It's a thing. And you know, there are contexts when that's something we need to know about for play. Yes. So.
No, for sure.
We're not made for being shaken too violently sometimes. Right. I mean, like tummy will tell me on any given day what I'm made for.
Also, I just want to highlight that there's a callback here. I think there was an episode where we mentioned a Jewish orgy, and you said that it was just be a bunch of people complaining about the food, saying my tummy hurts.
Yes.
And
it's like yep. Yeah, a Jewish orgy would be the same thing as a bunch of Jews going to a restaurant discussing like what they could and couldn't eat.
Oh no.
And the results of that. Oh,
that's so true.
Well, this is a little off the wall, just as a bit of a tangent, but when I one of my partners and I really enjoy anal, and I found that specifically after anal, if I have pasta, then my tummy just cannot handle it.
Oh no.
It's the weirdest thing, and I love pasta.
And you also love anal.
And I also, well, I'm not giving up the anal, so after anal, I don't have pasta.
Right.
That's so interesting. But pasta's fine at other times?
At other times, pasta's fine. It's just that I call it my gentle Jewish tummy. And maybe it's just like a timing thing that we can have a discussion off the air, because it's
no, for sure. It's a lot of questions we have left for the disability.
Yes, exactly. I'd like to come. I'd actually like to return to the doctor question.
Okay,
it's not. I don't know if I included this, but are you comfortable talking about that?
It's kind of an extension of I guess your experience in the kink community, because I mean, kind of talking to your medical.
Well, I want to come back to kink community specifically.
Okay.
Feels like a bigger question.
That's fair.
Before we get to like what it's been like for you in the kink community without people who are as aware of disability, I have been thinking a lot lately about what the experience of going to the doctor is like, especially because the things I disclose to my primary care provider are around kink and what I call me being a slutty mixed slut.
nice.
And she's very open to that, but not everyone is as able to advocate for themselves or know what to say. What has your experience in the medical world been like as a kinkster?
So the way that I learned that I needed to start telling everybody about it is because I have scars on my back, which are very clearly from intentional scarification from scalpel work. That we did not know were going to scar quite the way they did, because the way that EDS affects me impacts my skin a lot, and the collagen in the skin. And so when I started kink, we knew that I had something that's called a Chiari malformation, which has to do with my brain, but we didn't know about the EDS part. So there's a lot in the first few years that maybe we would have done differently had we known.
Live and learn.
Yep. So now I have basically a giant M on my back, which I'm happy with. I love it. But anytime I need it is I'm just not, kidding. But it can be yes. in our hearts.
It's so sweet that you did that for me.
But whenever I had to put on a hospital gown, I realized that might be visible. Mm. And so I had to start saying, just so you know, there are some scars on my back and I am safe. I am happy. I am in a consensual relationship. And I didn't necessarily connect that this relationship is the one that the scars come from. Right. I don't not connect it either. And for a while, that worked moderately well. I did have one doctor who looked at it and said, I'm not going to be the right doctor to treat you.
Whoa.
Mm. Yeah. But I'm glad that we got that out of the way on the first. No, for sure.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
did that feel like?
Like I'd wasted a lot of time and money.
Oh, no.
Largely.
Oh, no.
It's because it's so hard to get into specialists.
The visceral understanding I have of that.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh. Like, okay, back to the waiting list. Here we go.
Yeah.
Fuck me sideways. Jesus.
But, you know, everybody has their own boundaries and.
Right.
Whatever. I'd rather know then. So that worked well for a little while. And then I had a situation where I had a pelvic organ prolapse.
Mm.
And so I needed to go to the OBG immediately, and I had giant bruises on the backs of my thighs.
Oh, no.
And there were a few days I was like, can I wait for these to heal? And I was like, I can't wait for these to heal. And luckily, my OBG was super, super cool about things. She is the best. And it wasn't a problem, but it kept running through my head that, like, this could have turned really bad really quickly.
Yeah.
If
she had seen those and flagged abuse, we would have had a problem. So then I started bringing kink up on every first specialist appointment.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
And do you have a script that you can tell us?
So what I will generally do, actually, is I'll say that I am in a consensual BDSM relationship. And if there isn't an understanding flash on the face, I'll say, do you know what 50 Shades of Grey is?
Oh,
which I
no.
don't love to say, but it is enough in the like cultural
yes.
milieu.
Well, no, as is told in the book, it's in the cultural imaginary now. So as in people or cultural imagery, as it's an imaginary, to where people now are aware the cult, the shared consciousness.
Right. And it 50 was really helpful is, for some people in that way. Yeah.
Right. Which is unfortunate because of
my skin is crawling, but I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate because of the representation. And it's like an awful depiction. But also, yes, it does make that conversation a little bit easier.
And it's funny because you're telling this person, I'm not in an abusive relationship. Do you know about this abuse manual?
Right, because
it'll help you understand.
I know. So I'll say then I'll say, do you have any questions or concerns about that?
That's great.
And most of the time they'll say no, and then maybe several appointments down the line, they'll be like, so is this from your, and they'll just ..
Right.
And I know what we're talking about.
Does that make you, I mean, in my experience, when medical professionals aren't able to say words, I'm like, I don't like that you're not comfortable.
Oh yeah, no, it's not ideal. I'd rather have people who are comfortable talking about sex and bodies.
Yes.
Because bodies are involved in medical sciences. But
shocked.
Yeah. Can't get it all sometimes.
No, you can't. I want to move us to talking about the kink community, but I'm sure maybe next season we'll do a whole episode on going to the doctor as a kinky person. Cause it's.
Yeah. There's a lot to discuss there,
so
particularly
much.
For people multiple partners. I'm sure you've run
yes.
into. Yeah.
Again, slutty mix, slut. I have to tell my doctor.
Right.
And I think I've talked about it on the podcast, but she's not a doctor. She's a nurse practitioner. I should be very clear. And she's wonderful and I adore her.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her that I need to have STI testing whenever I want it, basically on demand. And she's like, cool, just come in. You don't even need to tell me anymore.
Nice.
But not everyone gets that. And a lot of people don't have insurance that covers STI testing any more than is literally allowed by the CDC. And like,
it's
complicated.
It is complicated, but I just want to clarify. So season 3, Vahatha, is directed to you. We have a Jewish episode.
Okay. And then I'm just showing up. I'm just on the team.
I'm just going to hang out at my house.
Hanging out with the cats.
Yes.
More than happy to.
Yes. Okay. I love that. I was mostly kidding about the Jewish episode. I just
I think like with all that I'm learning about Jewish history in the past 72 hours, I'm like, I want to know more about this culture thing that I've not paid attention to.
I mean, we are super cool, so I understand that.
See, I would agree with that statement. Now that yes. I know what I know, it's like, yeah, Jewish people are like really cool and awesome.
Yeah.
Also, the history is like tragic, but also like tells like a overarching story. Like you guys are the heroes, but also not the heroes, but also are. it's so nuanced. Anyway,
so human history then.
Oh. yes,
general
correct.
General human history. Okay, cool. Right. Let's talk about the community.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just generally start by talking about your experience as someone who has a disability in the kink community, either in our local North Carolina or at large? Whatever feels right to you.
Oh, that is such a big question. okay. Well, I will say that I'll start on something positive in a roundabout way, because nobody really likes to talk about the pandemic as being positive.
Yep.
But it did open up this world online for people who are disabled or ill, where all of a sudden all of these events were moved virtually that weren't before. And it opened up access for far more than just people who are disabled or ill, for people who can't travel, for people who are caregivers who can't leave the house as often for that reason, for people who can't afford to do the travel and hotel and ticket that.
Yeah.
And the online education that kind of flooded into the kink community then has for the most part remained. Online education, totally. You can still get online any given weekend and take like 17 classes. And that has been such a huge thing, I think, to just expand access in general and also make it so people have they're able to hear from experts they wouldn't have before because would have had to travel. And so I think that is one way that disability has benefit the kink community and vice versa. Mm. On the other hand, I think that there is a long way to go in terms of how venues and events approach accessibility. Mm. And how they communicate that to others. And that, I mean, that has to do with any venue or event anywhere. That's not just in kink. And then the other thing in the community that I think about a lot is, this is a, discipline's not the right word, but it's a community that is focused on the body in many ways. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you read my bio, I do have a lot of emotional play and service to my dynamic, much of which has to do with the fact that my body isn't the center of our play, intentionally. But bodies are centered, and people will very casually say things that are like, oh, you know, all real subs love anal. I have been banned medically from having anal, which is very sad. I too love anal. I can't have it anymore.
I'm sorry.
Can't have it anymore.
I'm sorry, because you're sad about it.
But people will very casually say,
that's
real subs love
absurd.
Anal.
Absurd.
Like
real
it is.
Subs
oh, for sure.
Anal.
Any kind of real so-and-so is absurd.
Yeah, any absolute,
absolutely
really.
Absurd. And as well as, we were talking about rope and how certain bodies on both the bottom and the top side are prioritized for very silly reasons. And I mean, that's an intersectional issue too. When I did do rope regularly, my primary top was super femme presenting, and she would suspend me in public, and people would come up and like try and get in my face and mouth to me, like, are you okay? And they would try and help her unsolicited with her hard point, which
oh
you never
gosh.
See with them. That's a digression here.
It's not a digression.
Well, no, but
it's
but
not
I do,
at all a digression.
I do want to emphasize that while I enjoy rope and I adore rope, I've heard these complaints a lot, and I echo these sentiments of like, if somebody is doing rope, leave them the hell alone.
Yeah.
Unless somebody's like dying or saying, hey, I need help, then leave them the fuck alone. Like, what do you gain from walking into like, oh, I see that you're being tied by this femme person. It's not a Domly Dom. It's not a Kenny. Okay. So therefore, I'm going to tell you that.
As a clarification to our listeners, Kenny is what we call fake Doms.
Yes, fake Doms. as a kid, just walking up, it's like, why? It's like, one, you're interrupting their scene. Two, you're making yourself look like an ass. And three, you make everybody else feel uncomfortable because it's like, now we gotta like go punch you in the face.
Now we have to explain sexism.
With it, deal with you. But the rope community mm-hmm. and not people not necessarily being aware of all the injuries that can stem from rope mm-hmm. when they first enter mm-hmm. has to do very much with the fact that when bottoms are getting injured or when their ability level changes, whether that is because of illness or an impairment or that's just age, mm-hmm. They tend to just kind of drop out of the community. I think that the online rope community we see as skewing very young.
Yes.
And that isn't because there aren't older people who are or have been rope bottoms. It's because many of them have gotten injured or right. are tired of the culture.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so they just drop away and it doesn't get talked about. And it does more than it used to. I see more people talking about it than they used to, but really, I think we have a skewed perception of how much people get injured in kink in general because the response is generally just to leave the kink community, not to talk about the fact right. that it happens.
Are there like any specific risk considerations people should have to preserve themselves? Like not just in rope, but just like in play in general. Like,
talk about a big question.
Yeah. I mean, nerve right. damage is cumulative in general, and that includes like nerves that are hit during impact. Oh. And if something... you get the electric shock feeling of a nerve impingement and then it right. backs off. That doesn't mean you're back to zero. That is, right. that is a cumulative still, thing yeah. over time.
Yeah.
So people don't think about that. This is a very big question.
Well, and, yeah. and part of the reason why is because if you know about the risks, then you can kind of try to figure out, okay, these are the risks for me as
Orange,
a...
Orange, are you talking about just in rope or are you talking about...
No, in general.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Well, because like these are risks for a okay, air quote able
now
person.
We have another episode we need to do.
Well, no, but
risk aware kink.
These are the risks for an air quote able person.
Right.
So then like what are the considerations for somebody who's maybe not as able or maybe disabled or differently or whatever proper term you want to throw into there. Mm-hmm. So like if you know the considerations for an able person, then I feel like there's extra considerations for a disabled person, or is it the same, or should it be the same for both? Like, what do we rely on?
So, even in saying what are the risk considerations for an abled person, what does that mean? Because everybody is different.
Correct,
everybody
for
has
sure.
its own history.
Right.
Point.
And so, the way that I would really like to see risk awareness skew in general is individual.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If it could all be individual, I think that we would, first of all, eliminate a lot of ableism in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people would be safer. And I'm trying to say this without like tooting my own horn, because that's not what
horn.
I'm supposed to do. So there's this risk database group that I started on FET because I was thinking about this sort of thing, and that we talk about the idea of risk aware, but how can you be risk aware if you aren't aware
of the
what
risks.
The risks are. Yeah. Right. Right, right. And so the big one that I always think of, because it never would have occurred to me until somebody submitted it to the group, is, okay, there are a lot of risks with breath play mm-hmm. And with things to do with water. And we think about all of the ways that breath play can impact you neurologically. But I had never heard somebody say, okay, what if you're doing waterboarding, very high risk activity,
mm-hmm.
And a string from the washcloth that's over someone's mouth gets loose and goes down their throat.
Mm.
And that's just a risk that never would have occurred to me before.
Yeah.
And so I've been trying to assemble these like crowdsourced mm-hmm. lists of the many different risks that can come from something, with the idea that how minor a risk it is doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not saying that because these risks, small or large, exist, anybody shouldn't do these things. It's
right.
just you should be aware. I mean, nobody would ever let someone skydive without them being aware that there is a tiny possibility of a parachute not
yeah.
opening.
Yes.
And so in the same way, I wish that people would talk about smaller risks.
Yeah.
So that
or
people
less
could apply
common.
Them to their own bodies.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I love that.
And like I do want to throw another note. Like, this is coming from me listening to Henry Abrahamson. definitely check him out if you see him on YouTube. He has like a lot of really cool Jewish history stuff and culture stuff. But one of the things he brought up was like Christianity is a doctrine. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. we have, you know, one doctrine, one document, you know, monotheistic. We follow this thing. It's absolute. Whereas from the Jewish perspective is like, you know, you're able to go in and kind of discuss these things. There's different things across the entire Jewish diaspora to where you can like have this view and that view. And you have the zealots over here. And then you have the not zealot. What was Jesus was a Prus. It's all like top of mind, but I don't have the right words yet. So my apologies. But what I'm saying is that there's different factions and different viewpoints and they can all be discussed. Whereas I feel like at least in the Triangle area, in the Bible Belt, as we're called, we are very much, you know, we've been conditioned socially to like accept that this is the way things are because they are. Whereas other people like, well, I would assume all of us are like, well, why is it like that? Why can't we change it? You know, why can't we discuss this? Can we sit down and talk about these things? Can we sit down and talk about the risk that are actually there? Can we try to make this better instead of just generically saying, you got to be risk aware? It's like, what does that mean? How do you define it?
It's a good point. Orange sometimes goes in circuitous routes to get to his points, but he always gets there. But it is a good point to say that saying things like just be risk aware, or like you pointed out before, just saying what's risky to able-bodied people is sort of a useless statement.
Right.
Mean anything to an individual. Mm-hmm. And I'm such a fan of the idea of, because when I negotiate, if someone doesn't ask me, like, what are the injuries or the things on your body or in your mental health background that I need to know about, if they don't ask me that, I probably wouldn't play with them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Because they need to know and they need to want to know. It's
right.
I would go so far as to say I shouldn't have to volunteer my medical history. They should.
Oh, yeah. I would agree. And it doesn't even have to be medical history. Right. I mean, sometimes you just have to know risks for the individual body parts that are going to be involved. And so it doesn't require
like no pasta like after anal.
Diagnosis or anything. Yeah. Yep.
I'm kidding. I didn't mean to interrupt. Please continue.
No, fair. I mean, it's a good example because that is something that is particular to you.
Yeah.
And if there were a diagnosis that went with that,
right.
Just saying the name of that diagnosis still might not mean anything to the person you're talking to. What they need to know is that if there's a pasta dinner planned, you can't have anal.
But also that kind of emphasizes another point that I wish we had a question about, but like visible versus invisible disabilities.
Yeah.
Like that.
Do
like
we
not
have
saying
a
that.
Question about that?
I mean, I'm happy to talk about it.
Let's talk
either
about
way.
It.
Yeah. Because I have several invisible disabilities, mm-hmm. and then I have ones that are visible at times.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are disabled folks with always visible disabilities as well. And how people get treated often ends up dependent on that. And I'm wearing wrist braces right now because I need to.
Mm-hmm.
But I found early on when I was very much like, oh, I don't want to wear a back brace in public. I was, you know, how is this going to affect how people see me? And it turned out that making invisible disability visible made it so that people were more forgiving of my access needs.
Mm.
Invisible disability, particularly with younger folks, gets disbelieved or thought of even as people faking something for... Which is so silly to me.
That's the stigmatization. Like me and Manga were actually chatting earlier about the concept of me potentially having ADHD as an adult, which I don't doubt. You know, it takes forever to do things, but when I do them amazingly. I blame school, by the way, because I wait to the last minute to do my homework and I still get A's. I'm just saying, I have not been punished for my...
But that is potentially a symptom of your ADHD.
See, you say that, but...
Because people with ADHD aren't capable of doing the work well. It just is sometimes more difficult for them to activate the activities.
But on the same token, like you say that, but what I want to point out is like there is a stigmatization because I've had this conversation with a different friend regarding the whole concept of me taking this medicine. And it's like they point out something that in the back of my mind I thought and like, you know, it's like one of those like I don't think it's influencing my decision that much.
Mm-hmm.
But it is to some degree the stigmatization of, oh, you take ADHD meds. Maybe you're one of those... insert offensive statement here type peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so when I go from a non-disabled person with air quotes, like very generous air quotes, by the way, because mm-hmm. I feel like we all have our own definitions of ability. When I go from that to a with air quotes disabled person, then like now I'm thinking like, oh no, I'm gonna have all these drawbacks and everything's gonna be worse, which goes to what you were saying, trying to keep your invisible things invisible mm-hmm. and not making them visible, and then like that changes society's perception of you, hopefully for the better, but
it's not always for the better. I was just gonna say, like, one of the questions is around how has the kink community failed you, and I'm wondering about like both that and your experience of like you had mentioned something before about like getting into venues, and I was curious if you had examples in mind along the lines of this question of like, in what ways has the community failed you?
Boy, do I.
pulls out list on the phone and just starts scrolling.
I mean, I think failed is a harsh word, but also kind of because I'm either a cynic or a realist, depending on how you view it this way. It's not the kink community in general. It's society as a whole. The way that we think about accessibility. And often with accessibility in kink and when it comes to venues and events, I see one of two things happen. And one is that people will see accessibility as what does it take to get you in the door? But once someone is in the door, if I am using a wheelchair and I can get in the door with it, there's a ramp, fantastic. But if all the play spaces are in the basement and there are only stairs to the basement, that doesn't help me.
Yep. I'm thinking of a very specific local event.
I think we probably
are. That is happening the weekend we are recording this podcast.
Oh, you're talking about that? Oh, yeah. Well, see, the thing about that one is like, so without naming names, like I've been to that venue and like, there's an event that happens there, and I was like, I feel like that's a lot of steps.
Oh, and they're very narrow. They're probably not like ADA compliant steps to begin with.
Correct. Now, granted, the venue has like a whole floor that like you can do stuff, but the basement is where the party is.
Yeah, well, it's where people hang out, and
also doesn't matter if there are events upstairs and down, if one area is not accessible to some people, that just kind of sucks.
Or bathrooms. Oh, like, I have definitely shown up places and then not been able to use the bathroom on any given day because they've told me it's accessible. And so I've thought, okay, like, I'm in a chair today, but I can still go and hang out. And then I can't use the bathrooms. So there's that. So that's one thing that happens is people think about what does it take to get you in the door, but not what does it take to get you with community and like being in a space. Or people don't want to address the fact that their venue isn't accessible. Right. They get defensive about it.
Yes.
People get very defensive about being asked accessibility questions when it's a yes or no question. It's not a I'm going to judge you if it's a no. But so they aren't upfront with the fact that something isn't accessible.
Right.
And that means that if people want to know, they are required to disclose, which because of those stigmas, among other reasons, they may not want to do. And so it leads to people just not coming at all.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to ask. And that, I think, is their right. And the information's not out there. And I would much rather know, okay, this is a place that I can't go if I am not going to be able to walk on gravel that night.
Right.
Then to know, to be told, like, it's accessible, but then, like, I can't get from my car to the door.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, and just to echo that sentiment, like, in my mind, you said walk on gravel. I was like, what's the problem? Oh, right. Of course. Because if you have trouble walking or if you have, like, need to, whatever mobility situations going on, gravel could be extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in my not thinking about that mind, I would have never thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
I had this thought as you were talking, which is that if people just don't show up to those events, it makes that event, I guess for lack of a better term, like sort of an ableist hotbed where people don't see disability.
Yeah.
And it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yep.
And it doesn't occur to them to like be upset about it. I don't really know what I'm trying to say.
And that's true all over the place, far more than just kink. And there are all these things that we don't think about because they end up being, I like this ableist hotbed term. so nobody ever asks, but kink venues specifically, they tend to have like this dark, moody lighting.
Yes.
Like the number one thing that I would love for venues to do for accessibility is to get floor lights.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, please put floor lights on your stairs. Please put watch your step signs
yes.
up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let people know. Don't compromise
reflective
that because
tape.
You want the moody lighting up. That ends up being things. Seating and not like, there's this trend of like, I don't know if it's supposed to be aesthetically attractive or what, but these chairs
God.
That
yeah.
are just like, they look like knots or
yes.
they look like, you know, stools. I don't know. The chairs aren't chairs anymore.
You're
no
making
seating.
Me think.
It's like
another
I'm just about
episode,
but,
kink aesthetics that are just silly.
Kink
right.
aesthetics? Okay. But in that statement, I was just imagining Bob was like yelling at clouds. Chairs aren't chairs anymore. No.
I could rant about that.
I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast before, but having play parties start in the middle of the day instead of at really late and
oh,
having
yeah.
them be well lit.
I am team early parties.
Early
yes.
parties, early play parties.
Yes.
Have them be well lit. And I'm like sometimes dig the vamp aesthetic, but sometimes I'm like, why can't this just be well lit? Like, why can't it be like pastel colors today?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Have a vamp aesthetic and still let people
yeah.
know, like,
right.
there's a hole in the ground over here.
Right.
Like, and,
yes.
and I've seen people not let others know about that.
Yeah.
And like keeping floors not sticky.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
something participants can do also. Like,
right.
cleaning up your space is not just a thing you do because it's gross not to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is something that could injure someone.
Yes.
Scents are something that I think about a lot,
yeah.
particularly because we have bodies that sweat
mm-hmm.
and people will try and cover up odors in various ways, which will make certain spaces inaccessible. For example, if you have allergies, if you have migraines,
right.
There are
or
many things.
You're just hypersensitive
yeah,
to scents.
Yeah, just hypersensitive to scents. So, you know, I've never seen a kink space say that it is scent-free. But that's something that participants can think of.
So wait, you're saying that station I have for cleaning dildos with Lysol wipes is not? That's a callback to Mango's story that Mango told a long time ago.
What story did I tell?
Using Lysol wipes to clean toys.
Oh,
sorry,
to be
sex
clear,
toys specifically.
This story involved being with a couple. This was in my early days of polyamory when I still thought that being invited into the space as a unicorn was a compliment and not horrifying.
Mm.
And this couple would use toys, and they were a penis person and a vagina person.
Mm-hmm.
And the penis person would use a toy on his partner, and then he would wipe it down with Lysol and try and use it on me. And I'm like, just change con.
Well, no, Mango. He's obviously, or sorry, the penis person is obviously doing it for the culture. Get it? Get it?
Oh my
get
God.
It.
I do get it.
That has levels.
It's, oh, at yeast you try.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
I concede.
Vahafta, if you need to leave now, I understand. I'm so sorry about the pun. I know it's a terrible thing to do. What you've been saying has me thinking about a lot more questions. We don't have a ton of time.
I'm saying so 90-minute episode.
I'm trying to prioritize
7
what
or 37.
We get to talk to you about because I
37
have
37 more minutes.
Orange.
Okay.
Cheese and crackers. I guess here's an important question.
Mm-hmm.
What do you wish people in the kink community knew about disabilities? I know that
mm-hmm.
is another really big question.
Yeah, and I think it's another one where it's like just, you know, not just kink communities, but people in normal life.
Mm-hmm.
My answer is just going to be my answer. It's not going to be necessarily what
mm-hmm.
anybody else would say. But I think it's that it's okay for people to be disabled. Because of that thing where people just won't address accessibility at all for some
right.
reason, because
right.
they feel like it's going to be offensive to say my space isn't accessible. People will not ask someone with a visible disability about their access needs out of fear of offending them.
Yeah.
Mm.
And we could just normalize asking everyone about their access needs.
Yeah.
For sure.
There is an attitude of what's sometimes referred to as inspiration porn.
Oh.
Where I'll see like some really cool photo of somebody who has been suspended with their chair. Mm-hmm. And everyone will say, this is so inspiring. Well, why is that inspiring?
Right.
Like, what's inspiring about this? I don't really understand. Right. Like I really don't understand what makes that inspiring. And right. and what that does is that centers an abled
yep.
world.
Right.
And says what we should be excited about is that a disabled person fit into this abled world and not just
right.
like
right,
we should
right.
be excited that people do things
right
at all.
right.
Yeah. So it's okay to ask about ability. That's a thing that we should do, in my opinion.
Where do you think the trepidation to ask comes from?
I think people are afraid of being wrong about somebody having some sort of need, and they don't want to offend people. And I can understand that, but it's like a safety issue.
I have to think, this reminds me of, I know some people who are like, I don't want to ask about people's pronouns because what if it offends them? And it's like, first of all, everything you do has the chance to offend someone at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But asking someone about their pronouns, at least in my experience, is almost always a positive thing.
Well, there's this book called Transgender History. I've quoted it a few times already previously, but I'm on listen number 5. Not saying I'm an expert in the book, but I'm actually listening to it on my way back home. But the book talks about pronouns, and it mentions the whole concept of pronouns, and says, for anybody who's wondering, if has not read the book, think of pronouns as a formal thing. I wouldn't go up to Mango and say, hi, Jill. And Mango's like, my name's not Jill. My name's Mango. I was like, no, you look like a Jill to me. So I'm going to call you Jill.
Yeah.
And it's like that kind of.
Why wouldn't you ask someone's name?
Why wouldn't you ask somebody's name? So pronouns right. are the same thing. So pronouns are you're familiar with the person. If right. you don't know, then you just ask, hey, what are your pronouns?
Right.
It's the same thing saying, hey, person, what is your name? And you say, my name is Mango. Right. I'm like, okay, cool. Hi, Mango.
I like the idea of adding on to that, asking like, hey, I'm going to a restaurant later. What are your accessibility needs?
Mm. Yeah, and there's this, there's an essay, I believe it's by Mia Mingus, but I'm not totally sure, called Access Intimacy.
Ooh.
And just the idea of asking somebody what they need in order to be in a space, like there's something very loving about that.
Agreed.
And it is intimate, and maybe that's part of the fear too, is that people don't feel close enough to someone to ask about, like, how does your body and brain work?
Right.
To go on like the invisible disability, neurodivergence route, things like I need a quiet space to decompress in. That's something that could have to do with disability, and it could also not have to do with disability.
Right.
And just saying like, what is your ideal to access a space? Like, I think that is a loving, generous thing to do.
You've really got me thinking, because in my mind, I assume everyone I meet is queer, and I assume everyone I meet wants to tell me their pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love this for you. I think you should live with that.
I appreciate that. I'm just thinking maybe I could also assume that everyone I meet has an accessibility need that perhaps they want to tell me about.
Mm-hmm.
Why not assume that? Because if I don't assume it, then I'm creating these ableist hotbed spaces, which is now a term I'm going to
use. Ableist hotbeds.
TM, I have coined it.
Mango's like, it is my term.
You just had me thinking, like, why not make my mental default be that everyone has an accessibility need that I can either accommodate or not, but if I don't know it, then I definitely can't.
Also has to do with, this is a whole nother thing, but honestly just like a deep misunderstanding of what HIPAA is.
People think they
can't ask each other about medical needs.
Don't get me, you literally do not get me started, because we will talk for a very, I work in healthcare and people.
You're violating my HIPAA rights by asking me to pay this medical bill.
Right. It's like when people say you're violating my free speech, and it's like, I cannot violate your free speech. I physically cannot do it.
The perfect case, I think somebody on FET was like, your FET Life is violating my freedom of speech. It's like, bro, we're a Canadian company.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have to, what my First Amendment right is being trampled on.
And they're a private company.
Right.
It wouldn't matter where they like, were from.
Yeah. But yeah, like even if it were true that you couldn't ask somebody about their medical needs, which are not, that's not true. But it's not the same as asking them for a diagnosis, which is important because so much of disability is undiagnosed.
Yes,
for sure.
Yeah. For various reasons.
Yeah.
Asking what do you need for a space to be comfortable for you? Like that is not a question about your diagnosis.
Right.
Yeah. All.
Well, I love that.
Well, we're definitely getting towards the end of our time. So I was gonna. I don't know if we had a final question or final.
I have final questions, but do you have a final question?
I have no particular final questions.
I wanted to end sort of on a positive.
Yeah.
Cool. I think all of this has been fantastic. I'm so thrilled you've been here. I also want to thank you for the labor you've done. You know, like for the most part, I'm what society would call able-bodied, so it's really I'm just grateful, so thank you for that.
Well, thanks for having me to share.
It's my our pleasure. We really
indeed
we want our community talking about this. I'm thinking about the event that's happening this weekend and how in so many ways it's inaccessible, not even just, I mean, like even from a cost perspective, that's a whole nother conversation.
Just to clarify for everybody who's like getting the pitchforks ready, we're not saying that the event has not made its own strides. We're saying there's aspects that have been in the shadow for a very long time.
Yes.
And it's like,
What I'd love to end on is, and I think you're probably going to talk about your husband here, but do you have examples of time when you felt seen and respected because of your disability in the kink community?
Yeah, you're right. I'm probably going to talk about my relationship. Well, partially because I feel like I don't have a great answer to this because I demand things. Mm-hmm. I am very proactive about asking about certain needs.
So Jewish. I love it.
It is, isn't it? I would say that the times that I felt seen and respected are the times when I don't have to.
Oh, I love that.
You know, anytime I brought up Gravel before, there's a local slosh. I'm sure you both know the one that you get parking. There's gravel. There's There's mud. And I do see people mention that a lot.
Right.
And whenever I see someone mention that, that's something that makes me feel like this is going to be a safe person. This is somebody that does think about things in that light. But yeah, in my relationship, I do have a lot of what we might call internalized ableism, and concerns that, oh, like, shouldn't my partner want to be with somebody who can play more often than I do? To which he'll be like, I'm old, I'm tired, no. but, you know, he has his own access needs. But
old, I'm tired. That's how I feel.
But, anytime that it's confirmed that I am sexy as I am, with, you know, talking to me about sex or play when I am laid up in bed with, you know, an ice pack and like 12 million braces and I've got just like a medicine cabinet next to me, or I will wear my wrist braces while having sex. And for a while I was like, is this like having sex with socks on? Is this a bad thing? and just it not being an issue, just like how I am treated not changing on a daily basis based on my health on that day. I think that's how I feel most seen and respected, because I'm not my abilities or disabilities. Like I am that. A person, I have limitations, and that's just how it is.
For sure.
Amazing place to end. I love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been fantastic for me. I really appreciate you being here with us.
Wait, and I was going to say as a final word for me, we have Jewish and kink.
We have just listing all the episodes.
We have kink aesthetics. we have What are we gonna, kink and doctors, doctors and kink.
Yeah, I mean, going to the doctor with and kinky, being kinky. I've written about, I told you, I work in public health.
Oh, I think I've seen you writing about this before.
I've literally written about going to the doctor.
And we mentioned like risk awareness. Yes. Just a note, yeah, SSC as a term is ableist. I would like it to be phased out.
Mm. Oh, that's
slide that into the end.
That's safe, sane.
Sane is considered to be an ableism. Mm.
But so is safe. I mean, not.
Yeah, well, I think safe is just a false term.
Right, that's what, sort of what I meant. I didn't mean, I meant just you can't, another time.
Listen.
Another time.
But three more episodes. So
yeah, we've got lots of episodes.
Lots of season three material.
I promise we'll try and avoid making puns if it'll
I love puns.
I'm glad. I love puns too, but other people don't love puns. I did want to, and there's a bit from John Mulaney when he was a wife guy before he stopped being a wife guy. He talked about his Jewish wife and how she would tell him, like, my stomach hurts. And then they would deal with that and move on. And you were saying you demand, you know, mm-hmm. what your needs are. And I, first of all, like, fuck yeah, I feel so Jewish. But it just made me think of me with mm-hmm. anal saying, my stomach hurts.
Sometimes that's what you gotta do.
Sometimes it's what you gotta do. So I guess that's where I'll take us out.
All right. So wait, do you have a final phrasing, or was that the final phrasing?
Yeah, I'm ready for my final phrasing.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna lower the volumes of me and Vahafta.
Okay, perfect.
And then Mango, you have the floor.
My stomach hurts!